in the history of Russia, Russia has not been carrying out aggressive, what we'll call wars of empire building around the world. The only country that's really been actively doing that over the last 30 years is the United States. And we can run down the list of different countries where we've launched various military adventures. So what's happening right now is the reality is Russia is going to secure the Russian-speaking provinces of Ukraine. And it's on no timetable. There's no clock ticking down that requires Russia accomplish these tasks by a date certain. What Russia did state at the outset is one of its objectives in what they called a special military operation. And we can talk about that later, the difference between a special military operation and actual war, is that they were going to denazify Ukraine and demilitarize. Well, they've got an unusual side benefit. They're actually demilitarizing NATO in the process, because by taking out Ukraine, you've eliminated what is de facto the second largest army in NATO. Secondly, you've emptied the storehouses and warehouses of weapons that NATO had stockpiled. So all of a sudden, instead of having ample supplies of 155 millimeter artillery shells, the United States is running around the world begging other countries to sell the United States those rounds so they can send them back to Ukraine. So I think Russia right now, its plan, it's quite content to continue to attrit and degrade the Ukrainian military capability, and they will press forward. I think their ultimate destination is going to be the Dnieper River and taking Odessa. It is up to the West, really, whether or not Russia expands military operations beyond that, because if the West ups the threat, if Poland decides to invade Belarus or send troops into Ukraine, the western part of Ukraine, and pose a threat to Belarus, then I think Russia's military objectives might change.
Yeah. I believe it was somebody in the U.S. Navy that came out and said that our stockpile of ammunition in the United States is getting dangerously low.
Mm-hmm.
When you say the United States is running out of ammunition and they're buying it from people around the world, that's a real story.
That's a real story. We bought it from South Korea. There's been some reports trying to get it from both Pakistan and from Israel. So one of the problems that is highlighted is that, unlike 80 years ago, when the United States had really probably the world's leading industrial capability, we were able, with the start of World War II, to turn on a production capability that was churning out an aircraft carrier literally in 2 months. Now think about today, it takes us 6 years to build an aircraft carrier. Then back then they were doing it in 2 months. They were turning out fighter aircraft in 2 days. And so the United States had the steel mills, they had the other manufacturing plants that they could do these, assemble these machines of war. Not today. Those have largely been eviscerated from the American landscape and sent overseas. So right now, the United States claims that it can produce 19,155 millimeter shells a month. Not my claim. That's been from the Biden administration. Well, Ukraine shoots that many in 3 days. So just do the math. Ukraine is doing in 3 days what the United States produces in 1 month. And if Ukraine keeps doing that day after day after day, the United States could never catch up to that. The only way it could catch up is it would have to actually construct the factories and then find the raw materials that would be required to produce those shells. So that's what has transpired. What the Russians call their special military operation has exposed the vulnerability of all of NATO, not just the United States, all of NATO, to be able to fight an industrial scale war.
Would you say that most Americans believe we could turn on the military engine overnight like we did for the world wars in the past. Because the reason I say that is I was speaking with somebody probably late 50s. He said, oh, not a big deal. America can ramp up military production within a matter of days if necessary. I said, they could barely ramp up making masks and hand sanitizer. Like, weapons of war, complex machines and weapons. So we're just not as skilled like we used to be either.
Right. That's the thing. You put your finger on it. It's not just the lack of those plants, the physical infrastructure. It's the lack of trained people who can do those jobs. And, you know, I think I commented before on your show that when I graduated from high school 50 years ago, myself and my classmates, our parents worked at Sheffield Steel or Armco Steel now, at Standard Oil, at Bendix Manufacturing, which was producing auto aviation parts and other sophisticated equipment, at Aulis Chalmers, which produced farm equipment like harvesters, and two automobile plants from General Motors that were in the Kansas City, Missouri area. Those are all gone. I mean, it's not like they've scaled back. They're gone. They don't exist there anymore. They're shuttered. So, you know, your friend's delusional. The United States, there's no switch to flip because we don't have those factories in place ready to start working.
Yeah. Wow. President Biden said in a speech recently that white supremacy is the biggest threat to the United States of America. But would you agree that most Americans have no idea that Ukraine is full of neo-Nazis, that they basically go around the country bullying citizens into complying with a certain lifestyle, a way of voting, a way of living? And this is one reason why denazification was like in the top three reasons why Russia was going into Ukraine.
Yeah, this is not some isolated phenomenon. It is genuine. It's authentic, and it's been around for years. You know, I recall, I guess the first time I really became aware of it was about 6 years ago, when I stumbled upon a documentary that was about the sons of two Nazis, the infamous Nazis. One was the son of Hans Frank, who set up the death camps in Poland, Auschwitz, Kalno, Majdanek, Sobibor, Treblinka. That was Hans Frank. And his son is now a man well into his 70s. And then the son of named von Wachter, who was the son of the governor general of Ukraine. And this documentary was taking them back, and they were sort of Hans Frank Jr. hated his father. Von Wachtel actually sort of loved his father. And they went to a ceremony in Ukraine where people were dressed up in Nazi uniforms. They were singing Nazi war songs. And they were talking about, couldn't we have the good old days when Von Wachtel was running things. So, I mean, this, you know, it's anecdotal, but it exemplifies that this is real. And then when you see these Azov battalion with all the different Nazi tattoos and Nazi symbology, there's no way to escape it. So here's the irony. They always get away with excuses. Well, how could they be Nazi? Because they got a Jewish president. Well, they do. And part of it, that is just designed to manipulate Western public opinion. Russia has a legitimate fear of the Nazis, because the last time the Nazis were running around with a military organization, they did invade Russia, and they did kill upwards of 27 million people.
A legitimate reason to fear. Let's switch gears to Poland. Poland says they're very nervous about their neighbors, Belarus, with their new nuclear weapons from Vladimir Putin, strong military ties to Russia. So they're going to add 10,000 new military troops to their border. Could this potentially spin out of control and two more countries are pulled into the war? Or is this just them being extra precautious because, unlike the United States, they actually care about protecting their border?
Yeah, no, I think this is it's a contrived move on the part of Poland. Number one, let's recall it's Poland that's hosting upwards of 10,000 American troops now on its soil that has put in place a missile system that was taken off an Aegis naval ship, and it's now on land and can be used to fire nuclear-tipped missiles at Russia. So Poland has been, if you want to look at it from Russia's standpoint, the aggressor here. Number two, Poland, the relationship between Poland and Ukraine is fraying with each passing day. It's becoming more antagonistic. And Poland's fearful that it's going to be left holding the bag. So it would like to try to provoke a conflict with Belarus in hopes that that would enforce or enact Article 5 of NATO and get the rest of NATO involved in the fight. Now, what these people are not taking into account is that NATO does not have a ready military force that can be activated and deployed within a week or two. And apart from being deployed, they can be amply supplied to carry out military operations. NATO has become very much sort of a paper tiger in that regard. And that's part of what has been exposed during this war between Russia and Ukraine over the last 18 months. So I think what you have is a small group of Polish leaders who are taking a very dangerous risk. And yet the elections are coming up in October. And from contacts I have in Poland, they indicate that the mood is swinging against war towards peace. So we shall see.
Okay. I mean, and speaking of holding the bag, I read, this was many months ago, I don't know if you have updated numbers, but wasn't Poland, in addition to hosting 10,000 U.S. military boots on the ground, weren't they hosting anywhere between 4 to 5 million Ukrainian refugees?
Yes, yes.
So that's also wearing down. I mean, New York City, Eric Adams, the mayor of New York City, thinks he has a problem. Imagine 5 million people spilling right into your tiny country, the resources and all of that. You know, hopefully this thing will come to an end and those people can return home. But there may be a lot of them that say, we never want to return, or there's nothing to return to.
Yeah, well, have you ever had some obnoxious friends come to visit you and you've offered them accommodations and then they overstay their welcome? That's what's happening in Poland. They've got those unwelcome guests who, you know, don't clean up after themselves, who leave the kitchen a mess and expect you to clean it up. And it's not sitting well with the Polish people.
Yeah. Okay. I said a couple of weeks ago that it looked like the battle between Russia and Ukraine was heading south to the Black Sea. You mentioned earlier the Dnieper River and also taking Odessa, which is a port city. Zelensky has declared that Ukraine will now start attacking anything in the Black Sea. How does President Zelensky's declaration of Russian supply vessels and ports as military targets impact the ongoing conflict between these two countries?
Well, what's actually happening is the Russia has launched an offensive up north around Kharkiv and is pressing on a broad front in the north. And Ukraine is evacuating population and falling back. Zelensky says these things, but their ability, it's to say it is one thing, to do it is another. And the problem Zelensky has is they don't have the weaponry and the physical reach to really launch a sustained campaign. Russia does, and Russia has counter battery and anti-missile defense systems that can defeat those. There's some evidence that one of the ships that was hit by a maritime